Thank you for standing by. Today's call is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. All participants will be on a listen-only mode for the duration of the call. During the question and answer period, if you would like to ask a question, please press star one. I will now turn the call over to Brady Phillips. You may begin.
Good morning, everyone, and thank you for joining this monthly climate call, part of the suite of climate services that NOAA provides to governments, businesses, academia, and the public to support informed decision-making. Again, I'm Brady Phillips with NOAA's Office of Communications in Washington, and I'll be facilitating the call today. So today we'll have three short presentations followed by an operator-assisted question and answer session. And we'll be following along a PowerPoint presentation that you can download at the following URL, www.ncdc.noaa.gov/SOTC/BREFINGS. Our first presenter is Jay Crouch, a climate scientist at NOAA's National Centers for Environmental Information. We'll provide a summary of the November U.S. and global climate highlights and the drought monitor released earlier this morning. The next presenter will be Tim Brown, the director of NOAA's Western Regional Climate Center. We'll discuss the record wildfire season in California and the West this fall. And the final presenter will be Brad Pugh, a meteorologist and seasonal forecaster at NOAA's Climate Prediction Center, who will provide the latest El Nino update, as well as the monthly and seasonal temperature, precipitation, and drought outlooks over the coming 3 months. Our speaker, first speaker will be Jake Crouch from NOAA's National Climate Center, Centers for Environmental Information. Jake?
Hi. Good morning, everybody. Thanks for joining us. I'm going to start off speaking to slide number 2 in the slide deck you can download from our website. Looking at the global temperatures for November 2017, this report was released on Monday. The November 2017 globally averaged temperature was 0.75 degrees Celsius above the 20th century average. And this was the fifth warmest November on record, tying November of 2016 as well. Pardon the typo on the slide, but November 2017 was the 41st consecutive November and 395th consecutive month that we've had globally average temperatures above the 20th century average. And there as well, you can see that the global land surface had its ninth warmest November, and the global ocean surface had its fifth warmest November. The map on the right shows how temperatures broke down around the globe during the month. We see that large areas of the global surface was much warmer and record warm. A couple areas of note, Bahrain had its warmest November on record. Tasmania in Australia had its warmest November on record, and Victoria in Australia had its second warmest November. We did have a couple of areas that were colder than average that I wanted to mention. Canada, as you can see on the map, was fairly cold during the month of November. Canada actually had its largest November snow cover extent on record, and that period of record dates back to the late 1960s. And we do have a large area of below average temperatures stretching off the coast of South America and the Pacific, stretching towards the equatorial Pacific, associated with the signal that we're seeing from La Nina. Moving on to slide number 3 to look at the first 11 months of the year, so looking at the January through November temperatures. This graphic shows how temperatures have evolved throughout the year in 2017 in the black line and then the other warmest years on record for the globe. So we can see that for the first 11 months of the year, we're comfortably sitting in the third warmest spot, so colder than the temperatures that we saw in 2016 and 2015, but quite a bit above what we saw in 2014. We've been saying since late summer that we would likely have the third warmest year on record, and that seems more certain than ever. So it is very likely that 2017 will be the third warmest year on record for the global surface. Moving on to slide number 4 to look at conditions here in the U.S. during November. It was a fairly warm and dry month for the contiguous U.S. The average temperature for the lower 48 was 3.4 degrees Fahrenheit above average, the seventh warmest November on record. And the global, the CONUS precipitation value was 0.65 inch below average and the 19th driest November on record. The two maps, so starting with the map on the left, we saw incredible warmth over a large part of the West in November. Arizona, Utah, Colorado, and New Mexico each had their warmest November on record. Arizona broke its previous November temperature record by 2.4 degrees Fahrenheit, which is quite a large jump over the previous warmest November. And we do see those above average temperatures stretching into the West Coast, into the Central Rockies, and into the Southern Plains. We did have near to below average conditions across parts of the Northern Plains, Upper Midwest, stretching through the Great Lakes and into the Northeast. Looking at precipitation during November, we did see interesting regional patterns. We did see wetter than average conditions across the Pacific Northwest, stretching into the Northern Rockies, as well as above average precipitation in parts of the Ohio Valley into the Great Lakes. A large area of the southern U.S., stretching into the upper Midwest as well as the Northeast, were very dry in November. Mississippi had its third driest November, Alabama and Arkansas its fourth driest, Oklahoma fifth driest, and Louisiana 10th driest. A lot of that dryness was centered in the lower Mississippi River Valley. Little Rock, Arkansas had its driest November on record, and it's also its driest autumn, and Arkansas had its driest autumn on record. Moving on to slide number five to look at conditions for the first 11 months of the year for, across the contiguous U.S., it has been a very warm year for the lower 48. The average temperature has been 2.6 degrees Fahrenheit above average, and this currently ranks as the third warmest January through November on record. Only the same period in 2012 and 2016 have been warmer. This is the 21st consecutive year that we've seen temperatures above the 20th century average for the contiguous U.S. The map on the left shows how those temperatures broke down for the first part of the year. We do see every state in the contiguous U.S. was warmer than average. This will be the third consecutive year that has been the case. We do see record warmth across the Southwest and Southeast, where numerous states have been record warm for the year. And then the time series on the right shows how temperatures have evolved for the contiguous U.S. back to our period of record beginning in 1895. So we can see we've been fairly warm over the last two decades for the contiguous U.S., and we're hanging out near the top of the pile there in terms of the 2017 temperatures. Moving on to my last slide to talk about the U.S. drought monitor that was released this morning. 26.2% of the lower 48 is in drought, and that is an increase of 14.2% since late October. So I mentioned that November was really dry across large parts of the U.S., and we've really seen drought explode and expand rapidly across many locations, particularly in the Southwest, Southern Plains, mid to lower Mississippi River Valley, and in the Southeast. We did see some drought improvement where it was wet, particularly in the Northwest, Northern Rockies, and Ohio Valley. And that improvement we saw in the Northeast was due to late October precipitation in that region. Hawaii has also been fairly wet recently. A pretty significant storm events have been impacting the Hawaiian Islands, and we've seen drought improve drastically there. And with that, I will pass it off to Tim.
All right. Thank you, Jake. Very wet winter and spring, and a very dry and hot summer in parts of the West, particularly Northern California, Pacific Northwest, and Northern Rockies, led to very significant fire season during the summer. And then October came along, and California, for the past 3 months, has really been impacted very hard by fire activity. In Northern California, there was a basically what we're calling a flash heat and dry event in late September and early October. And again, with the wet winter and spring, that increased some of the vegetation loading around the country, as well as in parts of California. And the weather event that was significantly related to the Northern California fires in early October, we're talking about the Santa Rosa area, are these northeasterly wind events. Northern California, they're referred to as the Diablo wind. In Southern California, they're referred to as the Santa Ana wind. And so in Southern California, where we still have extensive fire activity going on, particularly in the Thomas Fire. This has been related to a very long period dry. In fact, September, well, on the drought monitor, it's been showing some indication of dry in Southern California pretty much since the beginning of 2012. Over the fire itself, the Thomas Fire, measurable precipitation of, say, a tenth of an inch or more has not been received since February. And normally we would expect some of autumn rains in Southern California to help a little bit, but that didn't happen this year. And then with the strong Santa Ana wind event, the conditions were very prime for fire activity. On slide 8, go back to the Sonoma County fires. The red outlines indicate fire perimeters. The urban area there that you see is the Santa Rosa area. The Tubbs Fire ran into this community quite hard. And at one point during the peak of these fires, there was approximately 10,000 firefighting personnel involved with this event, to give you some sense of the size and significance of the activity. And one question is this unusual to have fire here? Well, the answer is going to be no, and it's not unusual to have fires in California at all. In fact, when Juan Cabrillo was exploring California in 1542, on the same date as the Sonoma County fires, the ship log shows smoke plumes over California. So fire is part of the landscape for sure. And on slide 9, there was a major fire back in 1964, which is outlined here with the red perimeter, and that was the Hanley Fire. The black perimeter is this year's Tubbs Fire, and you can see that it's a very close correspondence to where these two fires occurred. But one very major difference is we've had significant population and urban development growth in this area since the 1960s, and so these fires that might have burned like this 30, 40 years ago are now very impactful fires because of communities. In Southern California, on slide 10, this was a look from earlier in the month showing the fires. The Thomas Fire there on the upper left, that brown area, is the largest of these. And all these fires, by the way, they're all under investigation, but they will be human-related to whatever that is, because we do know that lightning was not a cause of these fires. And to put the whole state in some perspective, slide 11, it's kind of small print, but if you can see some of the colored areas on there, these represent perimeters from 1950 through 2012. And so you can see, especially in Southern California, that there's fires have occurred there for a long time and throughout this period of rapid growth and urban development in the area. And for the U.S., we're now at about 9.5 million acres burned, which is about 3 million above average, and at least the last 10-year average. And on slide 12, just to summarize California, this is from the CAL FIRE agency. These are the 20 top most destructive California wildfires, and I've highlighted five of these, so five out of the 20 have occurred this year. The Thomas Fire will likely become the number one fire in terms of area burned in California, but the Tubbs Fire, which was up in the Sonoma County area, the most in terms of structures and the unfortunate fatalities. So with that, I'll turn it over to Brad.
All right. Thank you, Tim. Good morning, everybody. This is Brad Pugh at the Climate Prediction Center. And the next slide, number 13, checking out the sea surface temperature anomalies in the upper left-hand corner. And the period on record here is November 19th through the 16th of December. And sea surface temperatures have averaged below normal from the dateline to the South American coast along the equator during that time period. And conversely, we see above-normal sea surface temperatures observed throughout the West Pacific, extending westward towards the Bay of Bengal. And in terms of the atmosphere, over the past month, we've had suppressed convection near the dateline and enhanced convection centered on the maritime continent surrounding the Indonesia region. So with the oceanic and atmospheric observations, La Nina conditions have become well established. And you can see the forecast from early December in the lower left-hand corner there, the bar graphs. And we're forecasting La Nina conditions to persist through the winter, with a transition to ENSO neutral conditions during the springtime. You can see in the bar graphs here, the gray bar denoting an increased chance for ENSO neutral conditions. You can see how those do increase as we move into the springtime. All right, so moving forward to slide 14, the monthly forecast for January 2018 indicates enhanced odds for above normal temperatures across California, the Southwest, and Texas. The highest odds for above normal temperatures are forecast across Arizona, New Mexico, and West Texas. Below normal temperatures are favored for parts of the Northern Rockies, Upper Mississippi Valley, Great Lakes region, and up in Alaska. Above normal temperatures are likely to continue for western parts of the state and also the Aleutians, with the below normal temperatures favored for southeast mainland Alaska and the Alaska Panhandle. In terms of precipitation expected during January, below normal precipitation is favored throughout the southwestern U.S., also a slight tilt in the odds for below normal precipitation over Southern California. Above normal precipitation during January is most likely to be observed across parts of the Ohio Valley, Central Appalachians, and also the northwest corner of the continental U.S., with below normal precip also favored for parts of southwest Alaska. And the next slide is the seasonal forecast, which covers the 3 months, January, February, and March. And these outlooks are based largely on the La Nina composites going forward through the season. Above normal temperatures are favored throughout the southern tier of the continental U.S. The highest probabilities for above normal temperatures are forecast for the southwestern U.S. Based on those La Nina composites, but also historical trends. Conversely, we have below normal temperatures favored for parts of the Pacific Northwest and also the Midwest Great Lakes region. And across Alaska, pretty strong dipole is forecast with above normal temperatures over northern parts of the state and below normal temperatures across southeast mainland Alaska and also the Alaska Panhandle. The precipitation outlook, a tight gradient here between below and above normal precip favored areas. La Nina would typically lead to below normal precipitation throughout the southern tier of the continental U.S. The most confident part of this forecast for below normal precipitation exists over the Florida Peninsula. And there is a slight tilt in the odds for below normal precipitation for much of the state of California. Meanwhile, above normal precipitation amounts are expected across the northern tier of the continental U.S. with the most likely areas, the Ohio Valley and also the northern Rockies. And up in Alaska, above normal precip is likely to accompany the above normal temperatures over the western and northern parts of the state. And below normal precip is favored for southeast mainland Alaska. And a final slide here is the U.S. seasonal drought outlook. And the valid period for this outlook covers the beginning date, which is today, December 21st, through the end of March 2018. Areas in brown, those are areas we are expecting the drought to persist through the end of March. Across the southern tier of the CONUS, the drought persist areas, that's consistent with the La Nina signal. Across the northern Great Plains, the persistence is based generally on a dry climatology during the winter months. The improvement you see in the forecast for the lower Mississippi Valley, that's based on rainfall that's occurred over the past week and also additional heavy rain forecast during the remainder of December. And the drought development areas, we have the most confidence for drought development over Florida, the southern high plains. And drought expansion is forecast over California, but with a little bit lower confidence compared to the southern high plains and Florida. And finally, in Hawaii, any lingering drought is expected to end over the next 3 months. Yeah, that's all I have from CPC.
Thank you, Brad. We will now turn to the folks on the call and take specific questions from those listening in. As a reminder, please be sure to indicate who you'd like to answer the question, if possible. And Rebecca, can you please remind the participants how they can ask a question and queue up the first call? Thanks.
We will now begin our question and answer session. If you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 from your phone, unmute your line, and record your first and last name clearly when prompted. One moment as we wait for the first question. Our first question comes from Brian Sullivan. Your line is now open.
Hey there. Thanks for doing this. The question I have concerns the drought, and it's kind of a two-parter here. One is, do you expect the drought to kind of grab California back into its arms again after this 1 year of getting out of it? And then secondly, the forecast goes into the end of March. What are the agricultural consequences of this to be coming into the spring with so many dry areas across the south?
Yeah, this is Brad. I can take that question. First, for California, it's a bit tricky coming off the very wet winter we had 2016-2017. For the most part, the reservoirs are in good shape. So any drought in terms of hydrological drought would be kind of slow to develop. But we could have lower soil moisture conditions, that type of drought develop as we head into later in the spring, with the most likely areas being central and southern California, as depicted here on the outlook. For the agricultural areas, I would say the probably the winter wheat area for Oklahoma and Texas. It's been quite dry there over the past couple of months, so that's degraded the quality of the winter wheat. And going into the spring, with continued dryness expected on a seasonal timescale, that could also lead to a poor winter wheat crop later in the springtime.
Thank you.
Yep, you're welcome.
As a reminder, if you would like to ask a question, please press star 1, unmute your line, and record your name clearly when prompted. Our next question comes from Mayor Arfan. Your line is now open.
Hi. Thanks for putting together this call. Regarding the wildfires, what can we say about 2017 as far as the precedent that we've seen in the past? Like, how much of an outlier is this year? What can we anticipate in the future? And then maybe more broadly about 2017 with respect to disasters, natural disasters overall.
Right. This is Tim. Thank you for that question. And by the way, happy winter solstice to everyone. It just began. 2017, particularly in California, this is certainly the most destructive and deadliest season for them. The context for this is as much about the society living in these very fire-prone environments as it is about the climate. If you take the Sonoma County event, in some ways that was not an unusual event to have a strong Diablo wind like that or to have the fuels available for that. In Southern California, again, there are plenty of fuels from particularly the chaparral environments that are near where folks are living. The Santa Ana winds, themselves are common events down there. So all it takes is an ignition of some kind, and particularly during these wind events, and terrain also can play a major role. An interesting thing about the Thomas Fire is that it's actually now running into the parts of it are running into the large burn area of the Zaca Fire from a few years ago that happened during the summer months. And that was a 200-some-thousand acre fire, I believe. And it was really terrain-driven event, not so much wind, whereas the fires that we're seeing this year are these wind-driven events. Warming temperatures that we've seen over the decades, are certainly a factor. And when we have these record-setting kind of hot summers, it certainly dries the fuels out and prevents them from moisture recovery because it's also drying out the soils. So there is a feedback process with that. I don't know if that fully answer your question.
I was just trying to just kind of say one way or another, is 2017 unprecedented? And I don't know if we can say that at this point.
For California, well, yes, if you combine the fire activity, the costs that are going to be incurred for the suppression, the costs of damage, I saw one number for Northern California, just the Sonoma County area, insurance estimates of losses of at least $65 billion. When you add all that up together, you can call 2017 unprecedented in California when you combine all of these factors.
Thank you.
As a reminder, if you would like to ask a question, please press star 1. Unmute your line, and record your first and last name clearly when prompted. We will now wait till we have another question in queue.
Okay, I'll put out the last call for questions. Okay, if not, I will begin to wrap up the call, and if another one comes in, we may go to it. Again, first, I'd like to thank all of our speakers today for their time and their presentations today, and for everyone else for participating in the call, the last one of this calendar year. And I would like to remind you of for some upcoming releases shortly after the new year. First, the U.S. Climate Highlights for the month of December, as well as the year 2017 in review, and an update to NOAA's billion-dollar disasters for the year 2017 will be released on January 8th, so mark your calendar for that. And the global climate highlights for both the month of December and the year 2017 will be released both by NOAA and NASA, and we'll have a separate media call on January 18th. The UK Met Office will also release their global temperature record on the same date as well. Finally, an audio file of this call will be posted on the NOAA.gov Media Advisory within about 60 to 90 minutes of the call. So if you need to refer back to some of the answers, you can do that. And if you have further informational needs, please email me at brady.phillips@NOAA.gov. And my contact information is also available at the top of the Media Advisory. So have a great winter solstice. The good news is it will get lighter every day from here on out till summer. And have a great holiday season, and we'll talk to you in the new year. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you for your participation in today's conference. You may disconnect at this time. Leaders.